Well, welcome to the podcast. Anything's possible. I'm your host, Joseph Anderson, and I'm all about helping people turn their impossible into possible. I've been helping people chase their hopes and dreams for the past 20 years as a personal coach now. And I started this podcast because I wanted to hear the stories about other people that have done extraordinary things that I look at and I'm like, how did you do that? And I want to hear the stories behind the success. And so today, I have the wonderful pleasure to have my friend Jenny Godfrey on. Now, Jenny Godfrey is a number one Sunday Times bestseller in the UK. And that just fascinates me. So, do you have anything you want to say to in introduce yourself at all?
Well, first of all, thank you for having me on, Joseph. And I'm really pleased to be able to talk about my story because I find the process of my becoming an author really interesting, even though it's my story, because it has some universal truths in it, I think. So I'm just really pleased to be here. Before I was a Sunday Times bestselling author, that still freaks me out, by the way. But before that,
Wait,
I
what do
worked.
you mean that what do you mean that freaks you out?
Well, because I still sort of can't get my head around the fact that my life has done a total 180 in the last 5 years. And 5 years ago, I didn't even have the notion of doing this in any way, shape, or form. So it's still a shock to me that I'm saying this and that I'm on this podcast to talk about this. But before I did that, I worked in the personal development field for a long
Hold on.
time.
I just want to point something out because I think this is really important. If you guys are listening to this and you guys hear this, a person that is literally a number one Sunday Times bestseller still doesn't believe they're a number one best Sunday Times bestseller, and it's okay.
Yeah.
We worry so much about all the noise and garbage in our head, and it's like, but I do. I just think that's so fascinating because we just get so in our heads, and so many people are so much more worried about working on their beliefs instead of working on their project. And so I just had to point that out that you're like, it literally says you're a number one Sunday Times bestseller with a crazy amount of books sold. And it's like, yeah. It's okay that you're still like, I still don't get it. I still don't get my head around it. It's okay, guys. You don't have to get it. You just put in the work, and believe it or not, you get where you want to be. Okay. Sorry. You carry on about how you moved over from corporate and stuff.
So I actually used to work in the personal development field in the corporate world. I was a HR director of a FTSE 100 company, and my job or my career for a very long time was my reason for living. It was my purpose, and I really loved it until I didn't anymore. And I suppose people might call it a midlife crisis. I don't really know. I started to feel as though I wanted to do something different. And actually, in truth, I don't know why I'm sort of circling around this, but I had a terrible depression and anxiety and became quite sick. And I was signed off work for a year, and during that year did a lot of thinking about the future and what I wanted to do and what I wanted to be. And during that time, I came across a book called The Inside Out Revolution, written by our good friend Michael Neal. And I read The Inside Out Revolution, and Michael knows this because I've told him. I read it and I thought, yeah, and like that's stuff I already know. I already know about thinking. I already know that that shapes your reality. I don't really know what's new about what he's writing about. And then maybe a month later, I realized that I wasn't sad anymore. And I realized that I wasn't anxious anymore. And I became really curious about how that had happened, how I suddenly felt so much better just from reading a book that at the time I thought, yeah, and. And I started doing a lot of reading, I started doing a lot of watching, I started to listen to a lot of podcasts. And to cut a very long story short, I'm sure you're going to ask me lots of questions about this, Joseph, but I did go back to work and I tried to carry on as before for about a couple of years, maybe longer, until one day a coach who I was working with at the time, who had trained with Michael Neal, said to me, "Are you sure you want to be doing this job anymore?" And the answer was instant, like instantaneous. And I said, "No, I don't want to be doing this anymore." And that moment, that question changed my life because within 3 months, I had taken voluntary redundancy from my job with nothing else to go to and no plan, just a feeling that I needed to trust that whatever I was going to do next would become apparent. And a few months later, it did become apparent. I decided I was going to write a novel. Never having written one before, never having done any creative writing since I was at school.
What happened between those 2 months?
What happened between those 2 months? I let some space into my life. I went outside a lot. I walked the dog a lot. I painted. I don't really paint, but I did painting. I did a program called The Artist's Way,
I swear
which is
by
about.
I swear by the artist's way.
Oh, I'm so glad. I'm so glad. I found it transformational, Joseph. So I did The Artist's Way, and I every time I panicked about what I was going to do with my life, I let it go and just trusted that something would come up.
So speak more to that because I think that'll be really helpful for people.
Well, when I left my job, and bearing in mind my career had been my whole life, and I was very reliant on the money, on the status, on it being something I was an, in quotes, expert on. I genuinely, I said to the coach that I was working with, I feel like I'm about to jump off a cliff. And he said, I bet you'll find the universe comes up to meet you. And that was my experience, that even though I felt before I made the leap, that it was an insane jump to make. Once I'd made it, I found myself being much more present to life and believing in a benevolent universe that would provide. And it did.
Had you always believed in a benevolent universe?
Yes-ish.
Say more to that.
So I think I've always believed in a God and felt that there is more to life than this. I've always had that. And I've had enough evidence in my life to demonstrate to me that that is the case. But then I've also had messages about a punishing God or a retributional god and a feeling that I was never going to be good enough and was not a good enough person to have good things happen to me. And those two things sort of coexisted at the same time, if that makes sense. And it sometimes in the space of an hour. So I could believe in a benevolent universe and then 5 minutes later think I was being punished for something.
So our thoughts kind of dance all over the place sometimes, huh?
Sometimes, Joseph, all the time. I mean, when I get moments of peace, I'm like, oh, this is amazing. And it doesn't happen as often as you might think it would. But yeah, I have always believed there's more to life than this. And I've believed in beauty and creativity and I think while some people might call what I had a midlife crisis, I think of it more as a spiritual crisis. And one where I had to trust in the benevolent universe.
What do you recommend for anyone going through a midlife crisis or a spiritual crisis? Because it sounds to me like that actually worked out. Like we kind of
Oh,
badmouth
yeah.
these midlife crises and
Oh,
stuff,
my
and
goodness.
they help
Yeah.
us if we pay attention.
I am so grateful for having experienced or gone through that. And I don't think you necessarily have to have a full-on kind of breakdown in order to break through. I don't believe that's the case. But that was what happened for me. And I am now endlessly grateful for it. And I think if I had any recommendations, it would be about looking in the direction of spiritual understanding as opposed to making decisions or plans to kind of avoid feeling anything. Does that make sense?
Speak more to it.
So, my temptation as a very practical, ambitious woman, my temptation when I first found myself in this situation was to fix it and to fix it quickly, and to fix it with medication, therapy, and plans. Oh my goodness, I love a plan, Joseph. And I like being very action oriented. And that's usually my solution for everything. Make a plan. But in this instance, I needed to stop and pay attention and have space and room to breathe in order to hear something different. And once I'd done that, I could hear more clearly what it was I needed to do.
I think that's beautiful because, it's like if you're driving a car and you have no idea where you're going and you start driving faster. It's just like, it doesn't make any sense, but that's what people tend to do. I'm freaking out. I'm freaking out. I gotta do something. No, you gotta chill. And, I love the scripture, be still and know that I am God. It doesn't say be still and try to figure everything out by yourself. Like things really
Yes.
do, they just come when we open up that space. I mean, I can think of experiences that I've had of things I felt inspired to do, and I haven't exactly done them very quickly. It's like this podcast, it actually came like I'd been looking for a name for it for a while, and this was over a year ago. And I kid you not, I was in a gym, and I look up and there's an advertisement, and on the advertisement it says anything's possible. I'm like, oh, there it is. I mean, it was just like, it was
Yes.
just so matter of fact. Now, it still took me over a year after that to, for whatever reason, whether it was ripening, whether it was getting ready, whether it was me getting out of my own way, but I felt so inspired to do this. And I think we do, like, we have those moments, but we can't force them. You know? They just come as, like, you so beautifully explained, and it's kind of like, you know, you can't just start a fire. You know, you got to give, and even if you put tons of logs, like, you still got to give space for the fire to breathe.
Yes.
So, what happened during that space of time? And if you don't mind me asking, and if I ask anything that's too personal, please just say so.
Sure.
But did you have any type of spiritual experience that just kind of, you said you gave space, and then, like, you know, you start essentially started the book, but, like, what? Do you remember the moment? Because I mean, I really do. I remember that moment. I remember another moment that I have exactly where I was and was like, what the, what the, what? Like, you know, what is happening? Like, what, why? I literally, I just kneeled down to pray one night. I was actually in my little nephew's bedroom back in, you know, back in the Midwest. And I still remember to this day the experience. God's like, this is what I want you to do. I'd love to say I've done that entirely. I have not. We all get caught up in our heads, myself included. So, but so for you, if you're willing to share, was there a moment? Did it come instantaneously, almost like a flash on a camera, or did it come more like a sunrise?
So,
Or another version?
well, I've got a, it's a bit of both. The
Cool.
sunrise was realizing I wanted to write a book. And that was, I can't remember the moment. I just, well, actually, I sort of can, in that I thought I'm going to write a book while I wait for whatever I'm supposed to do next to come up. How cool is that?
Do you think it was almost like God had to add something on for you? Be like, you're gonna do this. No, but just why I wait. Just why I wait.
So it makes me laugh now. Absolutely. And what was funny about it as well is I got my very, corporate commercial head on it straight away. And I thought, right, what are people reading at the moment? They're reading psychological thrillers. I'm going to write one of those because that way I know it will sell. And I started to write it and it was terrible, Joseph. I'm not kidding you. It's so awful.
I want to point something out because I love the scrunchy face that you had even when you're talking about it. I'm gonna write this.
It was all kind of self-determined. Coming from my head, not my heart. That's how I think about it now. And so I shelved it because I realized quite early on that it was terrible. And I went for a walk one day with the dog and was I had all kinds of ideas swirling around my head. And it was a beautiful spring day in the Somerset countryside, which is where I live in the UK. And I was just enjoying the space and the freedom and my dog. And the idea for the book that I wrote and that is now a Sunday Times bestseller was downloaded into my brain, including the title, all in one big go. And I knew straight away, I was, this is it. This is going to change my life. I had goosebumps at the time, knowing this is it. And I ran home and got home and just got paper out and just tried to capture everything that I'd seen because I'd seen it almost like a speeded up movie in my mind. I knew who all the characters were. I knew what the story was. I knew what the ending was. I knew what the title was. And I just sort of tried to capture as much of it as I could on paper. And I remember at the time feeling like, okay, I've been given it now. My only job is to write this up. My only job is to write up what I've seen. And that's what I spent the next year doing.
I want to point something out first about your experience. Like, guys, everybody is different, but I really find, at least for myself, that is what it feels like. I mean, it feels like, whoa, 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 what is this? And it just feels really good. And one of the thoughts that came to me as you were talking was how we have so much noise in our heads about what we should do, what we shouldn't do, what we're supposed to do. It just gets in the way of all that other stuff. I mean, but when you gave space, I mean, I loved how you said it. You were out walking and it just came to you. Because, you're out doing something else. You're out like relaxing. Your mind is not, trying to be scrunchy faced and be like, I gotta get this done. I gotta write a number one Sunday Times bestseller. It's like you just knew when it came. It was like, oh,
There it is. That's what it felt like. There it is.
yeah. Well, like from that point, what happened?
Well, this is where, again, when I say I get freaked out, it's just, it feels like, how did that happen? But, I learned to write a novel. So I learned a whole new industry.
What do you mean when I want you to really break this down for people? Because
So hard.
you have a very corporate mind.
Yes.
And what I have found in my life, is the people that can have more of a corporate mind, instead of making sure they feel good every moment of the day they're doing something, get a lot more done in the world. It's like we're inspired for a moment,
Oh, yeah.
but I'm not inspired every, like when I'm inspired, it's like, oh yes, I need to start lifting weights at the gym. It does not mean I wake up in the morning and oh my goodness, I get to go to the gym today. It is so wonderful. It's so amazing. I don't always feel like that. I'm like, awesome, let's get in the work. And so I really want you to speak a little bit to that, the work aspect. That's like the days that really were not so fun, the days that were really hard, some of your biggest struggles, and really, spell it out for people even slower. Because I think sometimes people are like, I'm inspired and everything was downloaded to me, and I went out and I wrote this in a day.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. That's so insightful, Joseph, because actually, I didn't know the first thing about writing a novel, really. I was a voracious reader, always have been, always will be. So I knew what storytelling looked like and what great storytelling looked like. But I had to learn a trade almost. So I actually invested some money in going on a course with a
Was that at the very beginning? You invested money in going onto a course? You
I
just went
mean,
for it.
I yeah, because I because again, I suppose I am a combination of very inspired and one would hope spiritual and very practical and very corporate and have a really strong work ethic. So you give me a challenge. So I felt like God had given me this incredible idea and story. My part of the bargain was to learn how to tell it. So I invested time and money to do
Hold
that.
on, hold on, hold on one second, because a question comes to my mind that I think might be really helpful. It's like we have this glorious vision, And I've had, as I shared, I've had my experiences too. And at least with one of them, it was like, afterwards, maybe not even in the moment, but afterwards, some of the doubt starts to creep in. And I love that word of creep because the doubt really does. It kind of creeps in. And sometimes it storms in, but sometimes it tries to make you think it's you. It's like, are you sure you can do this? Like, you don't know how to do that. And it's kind of telling you obvious stuff. It's like, you don't know how to, well, no, duh, I don't know how to do that. I've never done it. Like, why would I know how to do something I've never done? But it's very, I don't know. So I was curious, like, if you had the thought come in, be like, well, you're not an author. You don't know how to write a book. You can't do that. Did
Yeah,
you have any
constantly.
like that from the
Constantly.
beginning, though?
Constantly. Yeah, right from the beginning, Joseph. And my motto has become right anyway.
So you're telling me that even though you had a voice inside your head, which is just noise, you just kind of ignored it and went ahead and did it
Yeah,
anyways?
I wrote anyway.
Guys, ignore the voice in your head and do the thing anyways.
Do you know what I think really helped actually, and this is very, I suppose, again, it's quite practical, but I have run a couple of marathons, and I am not in any way, shape, or form built like an athlete. I've never been athletic in any way, shape, or form. I didn't even start running until I was in my early 40s, and I ran a marathon anyway. And
Wow.
that gave me, I mean, that was such a gift to me. What it gave me was a realization that it really didn't matter what I thought, but that I could achieve the thing anyway. And running a marathon, running a marathon is very similar to writing a novel. I mean, it genuinely is, Joseph, because you go through all the emotions and you keep going anyway. And I think that did really help me, knowing that even though I had no idea how to run a marathon, I've run two. So if I can do that, and I'm not in any way, like I said, a natural athlete, I am a natural reader and writer in the sense that I'd always like written very boring corporate reports, but I can write. So I felt like I had a head start.
I'm still blown away. No, no offense that you ran a marathon because that just really surprises me. That's amazing. Like,
Yeah, I know, it's insane. Running the New York Marathon was the best day of my life.
you ran the New York
Yeah,
Marathon?
I did run the New York Marathon in 2014, maybe. Yeah, best day of my life. So yeah.
How did you prepare to run a marathon? I know that's definitely off topic, but I'm just really curious because I think there's stuff that's just become ingrained almost in your DNA that I think might be helpful for people to hear.
But it's so similar, Joseph. It's that thing of I mean, with the marathon, I didn't have the moment on a dog walk where I decided I was going to do it. It was more of a being persuaded into it by friends. But once I have committed to something, body and soul, then I'm on that path. And no matter what happens, including no matter what happens inside my head, I'll keep pursuing it. And marathon training is actually, I almost feel like I want to whisper this, it's easier than writing a novel because you can download a plan off the internet and follow the plan. And if you follow your training plan, you can run a marathon. Genuinely.
So if you follow the plan that other people have laid out for you
Yeah.
for a marathon, it actually works.
Yeah, totally. Show up. I mean, it could be summarized in the two words show up.
And now I'm curious because you say you, what does it mean for you to go all in? We'll go back to the book now. I'll have to have a marathon person on some other time that can share even more. But I really want to focus on the book. But like, what would a day in your life look like? I mean, whether and like if there were different phases, like from the beginning to the middle to the end, because you said you worked on it for a year.
Well, I ended up working on it for 2 years in the end because I got a literary agent a year in and edited it with her for a year before it went to publishers. But all in for me when it came to writing was once I had committed internally to this being what I was going to do, I treated it as though it was my job, as though this was my career, even though it wasn't, because I wasn't getting paid for it and I had no idea what was going to happen. I treated it like a job. So I showed up to it every single day.
Now, I know one question just beforehand is how did you survive during this time? Did you have a bunch of savings? Did you have
Yeah, so
something else? Or
I
did you just
took
trust?
redundancy, which do you call it redundancy in the US? Severance? I don't know what you would call it,
Severance,
but
yeah.
yeah, I got some money from that, and it ran out after a while, and things happened that showed up and meant that I could still do it without
Are you able to
going up.
share any of those things that happened that just kind of showed up? If not, that's fine.
Somebody very close to me gave me some money, basically, because they believed that I would deliver on this.
Did you tell them that you were writing the book? Did you ask
Yeah,
for it? Did
totally.
you ask for
No, I
it
didn't ask
money?
for money. Nope.
So, hold up.
It's
Guys,
very, so Harper Lee had friends who gave her some money to allow her to live while she wrote To Kill a Mockingbird, and I had a friend do something similar.
hold on, we have to point out this miracle. Guys,
Yes.
so what happens to all of us, and this myself included, is we have these experiences where we're like, I'm not gonna survive, I'm gonna die,
Yeah.
I'm not gonna have enough money. And she went forward anyways. And I'm guessing when that severance was starting to run out, your redundancy was starting to run out. I'm guessing, were you a little bit worried, or were you just like,
Yeah, big time.
Or were you just trusting in
Nope.
God and saying he's got this, or were you
Nope.
worried?
Really worried. I had started applying for jobs back in the corporate world, very half-heartedly, admittedly, but I had started applying for jobs,
More out of fear than desire, right?
100%. Oh my goodness. I
How
had
much time
no desire.
did you waste doing that?
Not loads, to be honest.
Yeah, because you said it was half-hearted, but
Yeah, not loads.
what about mental energy? How much
Yeah,
mental
mental
energy
energy.
did
There
you
was a lot
waste?
of, there was time spent worrying about my future for sure. Yeah.
Although it was already taken care of.
Yes.
You know,
Yeah.
there's a quote that I love by Sid Banks. Sid Banks is a Scottish mystic, guys, that you know, you guys can look up more on of him online, but he created this understanding that is called the Three Principles that is amazing, that you can hear much more about on my other podcast, Happy and Single. And you can find tons out online, more than I could share with you in this moment. But he basically said every insight comes with its own packet, which means if you have an insight, if you have an inspiration to do something, the provisions will be provided for. And it's really cool because there's another scripture that I like. I, you know, happen to be a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. And in the Book of Mormon, there's a scripture that says, you know, the Lord will provide. You know, I, the Lord, will not give a commandment save I provide a way. And I just think that's so cool, especially when like two different traditions cross. And it's just like, whoa, I guess there's a universal truth here. I guess it's a universal truth. And And so, guys, what if you could just go forward relentlessly towards what you wanted? And as long as it felt good, knowing that you would be provided for, knowing that you would be taken care of, how much mental energy would we stop wasting?
Yes.
That's so, I mean, this is awesome. This is so beautiful. So, okay, so a miracle happened. You had some person that you just shared with them. Had you shared with them about your financial worries or anything, or just.
Not until quite late on, I shared that I was worried and I was running out of money. And it wasn't immediate, but it was a couple of months later that this person said, "I'd like to help." And it just saved me. Just saved me.
And I love this part of the story in particular, the struggle part, the part of what in the world am I doing part. Like,
Yes.
this is nuts. This is crazy. Because every biography I've ever read has that part in it.
Yes.
You know, and I've been fascinated by those parts lately.
Yeah.
Okay, so you had this amazing miracle of somebody
Yes.
literally giving you money. What happened next?
Well, again, it's interesting that I was also at the same time sort of researching into publishing, traditional publishing, because I was clear in my mind that I wanted to be published by a big five publisher. You know, I wanted this book to be in bookshops, basically. And if you do any research around traditional publishing, everything you find out is that it's really, really hard. And that it's really hard to get a literary agent. It's then really hard to get a book deal. And then when you've got a book deal, it's really hard to get in bookshops. And I do remember thinking, I'm going to have to ignore all of this, aren't I? As in, I'm going to have to really work on not getting waylaid by the fact that this is hard. And so again, I just kind of pressed on anyway. And actually, I've got a story I think you're going to love. Given, I've just remembered that this story I think you'll love, Joseph. So, when you to get a literary agent, you basically have to send emails to lots of literary agents, tell them about your book, give them a tiny sample of your writing, and then they say, "I'm interested, please send me the whole book," or they send you an email saying, "No, thank you," or most common of all, they don't reply at all. So that's the process. And through my research, I had found an amazing literary agent through just kind of online and looking at what literary agents represented writers I liked. And I'd chosen this woman. I thought she is the woman I want to represent me to sell my book to publishers. That's who I want. And so she was the first person I wrote an email to and sent it off to with my pitch and my sample. And she didn't reply. And I remember being really devastated about that because I was so convinced she was right for me. But hey, you know, sometimes you can be wrong about these things. And so I carried on writing to other literary agents. And it was a couple of months later that I watched on YouTube an interview with this woman who I thought was my dream literary agent. And on this interview, she said, "I reply to everybody who writes to me." And I thought, "Well, you didn't reply to me." I was really offended by it. And I was thinking, maybe she didn't get the email. Should I send it to her again? And then I thought, no, if it's meant to happen, it will happen. 3 weeks later, I got an email from her directly saying, Somebody has just shown me your work. I am really interested in your book. Can you send it to me? And it turned out that in between my sending her the email and then she had changed literary agencies and it hadn't gone through to her. And it also turned out that somebody independently of me and her had shown her this sample of my work. It was from the writing course I went on, and she really liked it. And she read the book overnight, offered me representation the next day. She is now my literary agent. So even when you think you've missed your moment, God is sat nav. It will be recalculated. Your route gets recalculated. Your jaw is on the floor, Joseph.
I think my jaw is even further through the floor. Like, that is amazing.
Isn't it cool?
It is just, it's wonderful. You know, it is just so amazing how when. Well, there's a couple things I want to pick up on. You did the work. You went through each. What was your process for going through literary agents, if you don't mind me asking? Like,
There's a
how much
big,
time and work did you put into
oh,
that?
that's big. That's big work. There's a big, very chunky book called The Writer's and Artist's Yearbook. And it has every literary agent in it and what they represent and how to get hold of them and what they require in their submissions. So there's that. But there's also kind of you look them up online, see what kind of people they are, all of that stuff. It's quite the challenge, let
How
me tell
many
you.
hours would you say roughly you
Oh
spent on that?
my goodness. Well, between that and putting together all the submissions and sending them off, probably 25 hours, I don't know.
Well, and the reason I wanted to point that out
Could
is
be
so many,
longer.
like, so many other people out there, like, oh, well, I'm just gonna hop on and pick the first literary agent
Oh no.
I see, or I'm just gonna shoot, you know, the same message out to everybody, or
No.
like, people don't understand how much actual work goes into each phase of the books. Like, there are universal ways that the world just works,
Yeah.
and the more people understand those, the more it's not like, oh my goodness, I can't believe that it took this long. And
Yeah.
I remember a story that, you know, our mutual friend Michael Neal told of, you know, how they wanted to get a, you know, certain contacts. So they made a list of 100 contacts that they wanted to be on, or I can't remember exactly who they were contacting. And they got like three of them. And the person was kind of, and you know, most people would be really discouraged by that, but sometimes those are actually good numbers. And so when you understand more of the way it actually works,
Yeah.
and it's just not like, oh goodness, it's like, that's how it works. Want to do it, or do you not want to do it?
Yeah.
Like, that's the only question. Like, to do or not to do,
Yeah.
this is how it works.
Yeah.
Like,
It's a very
doing
good
real
point.
stuff in the world, it takes work.
Yeah.
It takes showing up, it takes putting in the hours, putting in the effort. And so I just thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah. And actually, once I had signed with Now, then, you know, the real work started. So I s spent a year editing the book because this was my first novel. And how could I expect it to be perfect just all on my own? You know, Nell had amazing insight. She is very editorial, but she's also a real presence in the industry. So she gave me tons of feedback. And that feedback went into a year's work of getting the novel ready to go on submission to publishers to give it its best shot of selling.
How did you know she was the person for you?
Oh, she represents writers I really like. That was number one. But number two, she's present online and the Gen Z would say she's got good vibes. So she's very she's just got a really energetic personality, loads of integrity. You can just tell by what she tweets or what she puts on Instagram. I just knew that we would connect, and we do.
That's what I wanted you to say. You just knew. Like when you're giving such great examples of when we follow what we know to be right and also of what we want. It's like, oh man, I'd love this. You know, that combination of doing what we know to do and doing what we want to do leads to a pretty amazing life. So you got your agent. You guys, like, what was the, even before that though, like, but so had you finished your book mostly? Like, had you finished the first draft before you reached out? Okay. What was it like even writing the first draft? I mean, tell me about some of the biggest struggles that you had even writing that and how you overcame them.
Unsurprisingly, I guess, Joseph, the biggest struggles were in my mind.
Speak more to that because I think that's for most people. I mean, there is no real struggle in the work. I'm either doing the
No.
work or I'm not doing the work, right? Like,
Yes, so true.
you can't do both. But you talk about the struggles in people's minds, especially these days, since, you know, I don't know, like the world's just changed so much, and I think so many people struggle with just playing with the voices in their head. And the more you listen to the voice in your head, if you give a mouse, have you ever read the book, If You Give a Mouse a Cookie?
No.
So this is book. It basically says if you, it's a little kid's book. If you give a mouse a cookie, then he's going to want a glass of milk. If you give him a glass of milk, then he's going to want a nap, and it just kind of goes and goes and goes. And I really do think it's that if you give a mouse a cookie deal. But if I start recognizing and noticing the noise in my head, that is just noise. Next, and not even giving it audience, not entertaining it in the slightest. You know. And so I want you to share a little bit more about how you, what did you do when you just had a bunch of, I can't remember how you said it, but basically the noise in your head, or the battle in
So
your head.
I learned how to write anyway. I think I said that earlier. This kind of became my motto, write anyway. So I almost accepted that my head was going to be noisy and that it was going to be chattering away, telling me that I wasn't clever enough, I wasn't good enough. Who did I think I was to try and write a novel? Did I not know it's really hard? Did I not know the chances of me getting an agent were very low? Did I not know the chances of getting a book deal were even lower? I just accepted that my voice, the voice in my head, was going to have all of this chatter going on, and I wrote anyway.
Did it affect you?
Yes and no. In the
T
moment,
tell me both. Tell me the yes and no.
yes, in that sometimes I would find it felt like pulling teeth to even sit down at my desk and try to work. But no, in that I find it's almost like childbirth. Not that I've had children, but now I look back on it and I can't really remember those times, even though I know they happened. But I did also, actually, given that you've done the artist's way, you'll recognize this. I do morning pages every morning. And I find them, so for anybody who doesn't know, morning pages are where you write longhand, 3 pages of kind of stream of consciousness every morning to almost clear your head before you go about your day. And they're particularly useful for writers because that's how we process life and emotion. And I do find that doing my morning pages in the morning often neutralizes that voice because I've written it down. I can often, when I've written it down, see that it's ridiculous and that it doesn't tell the truth, which is helpful. So from a practical perspective, I do morning pages. I also meditate, and I'm very lucky, Joseph, in that I live in the middle of nowhere in the countryside, and there is just green fields for miles around and single track roads. And I walk a heck of a lot. And I find that is probably the best therapy for my voice out of anything, just walking.
Well, I mean, there's a few things I want to pick up on. Number one, I find it interesting that these battles that you had in your head, years, like when you were doing this, you said, "I can't even remember." So like we make a big deal of these battles in our head. It's like you're not even going to remember these things. Just write anyways. I mean, there's this saying, "Write the darn book." It's just like write the darn book. Do the darn thing that you want to do. And I loved how you talked about, the walks. I remember in Stephen King's memoir called On Writing, which is truly one of the best books I've
Wonderful.
ever read.
Wonderful.
He talks about that. He talks about going on walks. He talks about, all these things. And so, like, at the end of the day, you found a way. I mean, in my own book, I've been working on the same little paragraph, which is really important to the story, for days. Who cares? Like, the more we just show up to the work and just play, and the more we don't think of how it's supposed to work, because the way the world generally tells us it works, it doesn't work, So, after you got the first draft done, after you got your literary agent, what were some of the struggles and challenges you faced after that?
Well, the first was discovering that it wasn't ready to go to publishers straight away. And I wasn't so naive as to think that I was done, but I very quickly realized that I had more work to do than I thought I had. And, accepting that was a challenge. I'm a very impatient person and I like to get things done immediately, if not now, then tomorrow. So I found that challenging. But at the same time, I do talk about that year of editing with Nell, my agent. We call it my writing boot camp because that's what it felt like. I accelerated my learning about writing through her coaching over that year, leaps and bounds. Like, and everything she said, Joseph, I could knew would make the book better. So I was never in doubt that she was asking me to do the right things.
Ooh, but this is important because so many people are going to give advice in the world. How did you know that it was good advice for you?
Oh, that was just a gut thing, a
Yes,
feeling
that's exactly what I
of,
wanted you to say. Because that's the truth. It just feels right. Like we're going to have advice from so many people, and some of it is horrible, And when we listen to that horrible advice, it doesn't feel right.
And funnily enough, I had had two bits of advice along my journey from people who were very, they were in the industry, they knew what they were talking about, but I knew they were wrong. And I ignored their advice and I did the right thing because, it's the number one Sunday Times bestseller. So.
You did the right thing for
For
you.
me, yeah, exactly.
Like, guys, there is never a time somebody's going to give you advice that doesn't it like maybe there's a little bit of shock at first sometimes when somebody gives us advice and we're not sure, but like when we let it settle, it will either feel right for you or it won't. If it doesn't feel right, don't do it. And it's crazy, even in I was listening to Ru the Rush biography by Geddy Lee, and he talked about, oh man, everything, in me said to say no. I went against my instincts and I paid for it. It doesn't matter what we believe in. It doesn't matter. Like, these are universal truths. I mean, one of my favorite names for the Holy Ghost is the Spirit of Truth. Why? Because only the Spirit, like, when it tells us and it resonates something with us, it's like, yes, this is for you. It's like, it feels good, I mean, so if something feels good, as I've said many times, God made it so easy. He knew the world was going to be hard. He knew there'd be noise. If it's good for you, it'll feel good. If it's not, it won't. You don't have to sit much time thinking about it. You don't have to understand why. You don't have to dance with the noises in your head, And so that is so beautiful. So take us from there to the time the book actually got published then. So you spent a year editing.
And once it was ready, and I knew it was ready when I sent it to Nell the final time. I knew in my heart, I was like, this is it. She's going to say it's ready. And she did. Again, all instinct.
Guys, are
But
you
we.
guys paying attention and hearing how important instinct and gut feel
Oh,
and good
yeah.
feelings are? Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. But let's just drum that home.
Right? That's everything,
And.
guys. That's everything.
And my agent, so we'd planned when it was going to go to publishers, and Nell had talked to me about the process can sometimes take, it can take a week, it can take a month, it can take a year for editors to even read a submission because, of course, they've got hundreds of literary agents sending them submissions all the time. So she really managed my expectations that this was going to take a while. And on the day that she sent the email to editors, it was 8:30 in the morning. She sent me the email and said, "I've sent it out to editors. This is who it's gone to." And it was kind of people at Penguin, HarperCollins, Pam Macmillan. That's who it's gone to. And now we wait. And so I thought, great, okay, we'll wait. And it so happened that my mum wasn't very well. So I drove up to where she lives to go to the hospital. She is fine now, but it's a drama at the time. But I never thought to say to Nell, "Nell, my mum's ill, I'm going to a hospital now," because we had already talked about the fact that the process takes months. And I was driving back from the hospital to my mum's house on that day. So it was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. The sun was shining. And Nell's name flashed up on my phone. So I answered the phone and she said, "Jenny, are you driving?" And I said, "Yes." She said, "Can you pull over?" And I was like, "Okay." And I pulled over and she said, "Jenny, it is 8.5 hours after the book went out, and you've had your first offer." And the next 48 hours was a surreal flurry of offers, counteroffers, people offering to drive to where I was to sell themselves to me, to want to be my publisher. I mean, it was insane. But again, I knew the second, so I did have a few calls with various editors, and the moment I connected with Venetia, who is my editor at Penguin, I knew she was the one. I knew the second we spoke to each other that we were gonna work together brilliantly, and I said yes, and she is the person that I then worked with. But again, Joseph, it's not instant then. It was another year and a half before the book was published because there's a whole process you have to go through from cover design to final edits and typesetting to, especially with a book like mine, because I'm an unknown author and I'm not a celebrity. My publisher spent a
She
year
was
basically building
an unknown
buzz.
author. She was.
I was, yeah, I
She's
was
the
an unknown
number one
author.
Sunday Times bestseller now.
But you know, they create buzz. You know, there's a whole campaign that goes into launching a new author in the world. And so it was a year and a half then before it was published on the 16th of February, 2024.
What was that day like for you when
Oh,
your book
I
was
can
published
barely
last
remember it.
year?
It was genuinely, I think I felt like I was so filled with adrenaline. And I was like recording a podcast that day. I had a big party in London. I was had a photo shoot. I mean, it was just insane. And I probably should say as well that my really sadly, my dad died 11 days before the book was published. And so I was in the kind of
I'm so
maelstrom
sorry.
of grief and sort of doing two things at once, celebrating my book and being desperately sad that my dad wasn't there. And yeah, there was a lot going on that day. I'm just really glad I got a photographer to take photos of it all because that's how I remember that it happened. Yeah, it was mad. And then the following Thursday, no, the following Tuesday is when you get the call to say whether it's made the charts or not. And I was sat in my car and Venetia called me to say it had made the charts. It was an instant Sunday Times bestseller. And I just cried. And it stayed in the charts then for, I think it was 9 weeks. That was in hardback. And obviously, it was published in paperback this year, which is when it reached number one. And that's around the time that I met you. And my life has changed.
That's just amazing. Like, and again, I'm so sorry for the loss of your father. Like,
Thank you.
and I guess it bears to remind people, just because you go after your dreams does not mean that things won't happen. There's
Yes.
so many things outside of our control.
Yes, life is life.
And you can still be happy for yourself anyways. I think there's this thing in the world that it's like, oh no, like these horrible things are happening to people around me. Like we've all been there. We've all been through those things, and absolutely they're challenging and they're hard and they're frustrating. But just because even people close to you are having struggles and challenges does not mean that you can't go after and chase your dreams. I know so many people, like, oftentimes I'll hear stuff like, oh well, when the kids are out of the house, when everything's perfect, then it will be the time to write. There's
That's never gonna happen.
never, ever. And so all of those thoughts are just, what in the past I've called crazy leprechaun thinking, because it sounds really clever, but it's not there to help you. It's just noise in your head that the less you pay attention to it, the better off you are. Like, of course, and I find it really interesting that some people are like, oh, when the kids are out of the house, I'll do this. But at the same time, they're sitting on their phones, spending time with their kids, playing Candy Crush or whatever other game they're playing on their phone. They're not actually spending time with their kids. They're just like, I gotta spend time with my kids, but their heart wants to be somewhere else. It's okay to work on what you want to work on. You only have so many years of living too. But I want you to speak a tiny bit more mean, you pretty much hit this, but anything else you want to say to anyone out there that is just petrified to leave their corporate job, what I kind of call golden handcuffs or silver handcuffs, whatever you want to call them, because yeah, they have a decent life financially, but they hate every other second of their life.
Yeah. So I've said this before and not on here, but it bears repeating. I have found that I prefer uncertainty to unhappiness.
Wow, that's gorgeous, Jenny.
And that was a real revelation to me because my corporate life looked really certain, but it made me really, really unhappy. My life now makes me really, really happy. But as an author, it's way more uncertain. I know which I prefer.
Well, so what would you say if you could give a message to somebody that's, and you kind of said it there with, I prefer uncertainty to unhappiness, to somebody's like, man, I had that moment. I had that moment where I gave space and I had this beautiful vision come to me, and I'm still just scared out of my mind to do it.
Yeah. I would also say God is sat nav. So
Say that again. God is what?
sat nav, satellite navigation.
Oh, okay.
So
Gotcha.
you know how if you go off, it
Yeah.
reroutes you. And that's, if you'd have asked me what I wanted to be when I was 8 years old, Joseph, I would have said an author. That's what I would have wanted to be.
Seriously?
Yeah.
That's so cool.
And, I went off. I took different roads. I definitely took the scenic route. But I was always rerouted back. And at 53 years old, I became a published author.
So you're saying an author doesn't have to start when they're like 20 or 30 or even
Oh, I'm
40?
definitely saying that. Yeah. I really am. So even if you feel like you've missed your moment, God is sat nav.
Well, you'd said that earlier, and I didn't. I was going to ask you about it, so I'm glad you clarified. The God is
Yes.
sat nav. He is, and people, another way to say it is he's our GPS.
Yeah,
And when we just
GPS,
trust,
that's the I knew that there was an American term for it.
you're
Yes.
good. We'll convert it so people all over the world, at least in the UK and USA,
Yeah, they'll understand.
so guys, no matter how old you are, as I often say, like whether you're 10 or not, like 99, it does not matter how old or how young you are. You're never too young or too old to start. You just start. So for somebody that, well, actually, looking ahead, now that you've had this experience of becoming like a legit published author that sold an insane amount of books and become a number one Sunday Times bestseller. What's one dream you have now, whether it's in writing or whether it's in something else, that maybe feels even impossible right now? And how are you starting to take steps towards making it a reality?
It's interesting actually, because right now I don't have necessarily the grand dream that I had with the list of suspicious things. What I do have though is I want to have a career as an author. I want to be more than a one book wonder. So I have written my second novel. During all the maelstrom of insanity of the last year, somehow I managed to write another one, which I am hoping will be published next year.
Was it different for you to write a second
Yes.
book versus the first?
Yes.
Can
It's
you
much
share at least
harder.
your, like I didn't realize you'd already finished a second book. Like, did you share a little bit to that experience? I know we probably don't have as much time to go into every detail, but can you give an overall, like, how that was different than the first?
Well, it was different to the first because, I knew Penguin were gonna want to publish it. So I didn't have all of that going on. But what I did have going on is the fact that people had loved the first one and that it was a Sunday Times bestseller. And what if I disappoint them? What if I can't do it again? What if that was a one-off? What if it was a fluke?
So you're telling me that the voice in our head doesn't ever go away. It just
Oh,
changes.
never.
It just changes what it's telling us. It's like, I
Absolutely,
know you
that's.
had a best-selling book before, but you can't do it again.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, it's like the ultimate metamorphosis machine. Like, it never, ever, ever stops.
And in a way, that's freeing. In a way, that's freeing, Joseph, because it's almost like, well, if it's gonna keep going anyway, it makes it easier to ignore it because we know that it's just chattering on. But I have had to do quite a lot of work on making sure I ignore it in order to get a second book written, because it's actually not uncommon for people who have a very successful first novel to not write a second one. And I was determined that that wasn't going to be my story, that I wasn't going to be that person.
Have you ever seen the Christmas movie Home Alone?
Yes.
I love the scene in there where, at first the furnace really scares him, and finally he walks in, he's like, ah, shut up.
Yes,
And that's kind of how I look at the voice in our head. For me, the worst is when it tries to pretend it's the voice of God. Where it's like, Joseph, are you sure this is the right thing that God wants you to do? And it's like, I mean, I kind of had these really awesome experiences, but now that you say so, maybe not. So, well, the last question I want to ask you, I know we got to wrap up here, but for anybody dreaming, first of all, for a kid dreaming, so I've got this has two parts. So, for a kid that dreams of becoming an author, what would you tell them? And like, about how to create a book, even if they wanted to, by the time they were just still super young. And also, somebody that feels they've missed their boat to become an author, but deep inside, they know they want to become an author. Give advice to those two groups.
Well, first of all, to the children. All you need to do as a kid is read. Just read lots and lots and lots of books. And if you do that, you'll learn to write by osmosis. So that's what I would say to a kid. Just read loads. To an adult who feels like they've missed the boat, you've never missed the boat. There's just no such thing. If the boat is your boat, you can't miss it.
How would you tell them to start, the people that have missed
Oh, just get something down on paper.
it's that simple, just getting something
Yeah,
down on paper?
there really is something in that. There's an old adage, you can't edit a blank page. And that is absolutely true. So get something written down, even if it's rubbish, you have time, the opportunity to make it better, but you can't edit something that's not there.
Well, it's been such a pleasure to have you on, Jenny. This has been so much fun.
So
I
much
have
fun,
loved this.
Joseph. Yeah.
Can you share with, like, in case we didn't mention it before? So she wrote this really awesome book called The List of Suspicious Things. That's right?
Yes, correct.
And just share with people how they can connect with you, how they can follow you, etc., if they want to
Sure.
connect with you.
And for your US listeners, it's out in December 2025. It's already out in the UK and in I don't know. I've got about 20 translations. So there's
What?
an, I
20
know,
translations already?
20 translations. Yeah, it's absolutely insane, Joseph.
I love your excitement. This is so cool, Jenny.
Some of those are out and some of those are coming out this year. But you can find me on Instagram and I am Jenny, and that's JENNIE dot Godfrey on Instagram. And on X, I am Jenny G, and that's JENNIAEG underscore author. And those are the two places you can find me. Oh, I also write a Substack called The Crow's Nest, and that Substack is about creativity and writing. So please do hook up with me there.
Well, guys, check out her book. I haven't been able to read it yet because, again, it doesn't come out in the USA until December. So, but I'm sure it's awesome. And thank you so much for joining me. This has been amazing.
Thank you very much for having me, Joseph.